It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Discover a new educational and interactive podcast, Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids. Our episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We went shape hunting around the block, and we found spheres and cubes on the street.
That was great fun. Join Stories for Kids, the Lingo Kids podcast, inspiring you to learn while having fun. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. I'm Bobby Sylvester, joined as always by Mike Tagliere, and we're on Twitter at Bobby Fantasy Pro and at Mike Tagliere NFL. Tags, fresh off the mock draft loss, I figure we should turn the page a little bit and talk about some free agency winners and losers today. What do you think?
Of course you'd want to move on to some other topic outside of our mock draft.
I wanted to do another mock draft episode, but you were scared.
I'm not scared. It's just we're holding that off. You need some time to, you know, lick your wounds and all that. But it's a good day in my household. I've reached a new personal record. I've now gone to the gym 16 days in a row. And I feel pretty good about that. I was doing a lot of cardio, but I don't know, right after high school. So it's been quite a long time. So I've started lifting a little bit and I feel like I'm getting into better shape.
Good for you, man. Yeah, I'm kind of on an opposite streak right now. I'm on a 3 consecutive day pizza streak. And that is nowhere close to my personal record. My personal record is honestly probably close to 40 days when I used to manage that pizza restaurant. I ate pizza every day, right?
Holy cow.
And but 3 days, that I'm feeling pretty good about myself.
So when you managed this pizza restaurant that you talk about, did you like suggest that you guys start serving buttered pizza?
Well, I mean, no.
You could have made a worldwide movement, Bobby.
We had some that had butter on it. But the thing is, with a lot of pizza and a lot of people listening to this and a lot of people who trash me on Twitter for saying I put butter on my pizza, don't realize that they've had butter on pizza and they like it. Because a lot of places put butter on their pizza and they don't even know it.
The garlic butter is different because that stuff goes on.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about dipping it in there, man. I'm talking about like they paint just a little tiny bit on the base of the pizza before they put the sauce down.
Is that why all the grease dips off when people eat it?
You like Lou Malnati's? Butter base, baby.
Yeah, and Lou Malnati's is good. So, I mean, my wife has told me that she thinks I'm going to enjoy your buttered pizza that I have to eat for losing our bet, that she thinks I'm actually going to enjoy it and that I'm going to have to, like, apologize to our listener base.
I think that you probably, well, I don't know about apologize, but you might probably cry on camera with just how delicious it is and that you've missed out on it for, I don't know, how old are you, 25?
Yeah, I wish I was 25. We're going back 10 years.
Okay, man. So here's what we have planned for today. We're going to talk about 2 winners in redraft leagues, and we're going to count them down, just trade back and forth. 2 winners in dynasty leagues, and those are for players. 1 or 2 winners for teams, and then we're going to go losers at the end of that. First, though, I want to talk to you a little about pristineauction.com. At Pristine Auction, they've got hundreds of items that they auction off every day, and I'm always leaving this site open so I don't miss out on any values. You know, I saw some really good ones. There's always good values that you can find every day. I saw a Melvin Gordon signed Chargers jersey, went for $80. I saw a signed Bradley Chubb Broncos helmet go for $80 as well. There's always values. If you want to spend up a little bit, you can get some Hall of Famers as well. Everything is guaranteed authentic from only the most trusted sources. Pristine Auction has so many options. You will definitely find something for your cave that you love, no matter who your favorite team is. Again, that's pristineauction.com, P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E. All right, Tag, so let's jump right into it. We'll go winners for redraft leagues. And so, you know, the difference between redraft and dynasty leagues, if you don't know, is redraft leagues, you don't keep any of the same players year to year. So this is just your standard league that almost everybody does. Who is one winner in redraft leagues for you?
I'm going to go with Devin Funchess here. And, you know, the reason I put him in this redraft conversation rather than the dynasty one is because, you know, he got a one-year deal with the Colts. And this is a good one-year deal. It's not like Dante Moncrief from last year where he signed a one-year deal with the Jaguars in Blake Bortles. You know, he was tied for $10 million there. This is essentially the same contract to Devin Funchess. He could earn up to $13 million. By the Colts signing him to a one-year deal and offering those incentives, it kind of tells him that he's going to have a chance in the starting lineup opposite of T.Y. Hilton to play, you know, that big wide receiver, the red zone option. I believe that Devin Funchess can take some of those touchdowns that Eric Ebron scored in 2018 and turn them into his own. You know, playing with Cam Newton as long as he did and being fantasy relevant when he was called upon, I feel like Devin Funchess gained a whole bunch of value from this trade. And, you know, the Colts do have three picks in the first two rounds. So, you know, can they draft a wide receiver? Sure. But it doesn't seem like they're going to. They had a lot of picks. They had, I think, four picks in the first two rounds last year. And they didn't select a single wide receiver until I think it was the fifth round in Dorrice Fountain. So I don't know. It just doesn't seem like this team wants to draft a wide receiver. They're okay with Funchess.
And why would they when you can just pass it to tight ends all the time? You've got two good ones. You've got T.Y. Hilton. You've got Funchess now. Even Deion Kane, I think, is going to come back. They had some guys, maybe Dontrell Inman, they'll resign and use him as a depth piece. And he was solid last year. Andrew Luck can get it done without these guys. And so I agree. I think Funchess is going to start. Wasn't on my radar whatsoever until he signed with the Colts. And of course, he has to be on my radar now. I'd take him over Demaryius Thomas.
Yep, absolutely. That's kind of where I'm at with this, isn't that I just feel like Demaryius Thomas, I don't think, is going to have a team. Devin Funchess, I think you can talk about him as a top 40 wide receiver going into this year. Like, I feel like he's in the conversation where you might be able to start him as a wide receiver 3, but ideally you'd have him as a wide receiver 4 and you kind of play the matchups between him and someone else.
Okay, so let's see just how high you're willing to go on him, okay? I'm just going to read you names. You stop me when I get to someone you wouldn't take him over. Dante Moncrief with Pittsburgh.
Give me Funchess.
Emmanuel Sanders with Denver.
Funchess.
Funchess, I agree. Traquan Smith.
Funchess.
Devontae Parker.
Ooh, getting closer with Ryan Fitzpatrick. I'll probably still go Funchess, but it's close.
Me too. Dede Westbrook.
Funchess.
John Ross.
Funchess.
Antonio Callaway.
Funchess, easy.
Yeah, I think so as well. Okay, so let's get up here a little bit further. Michael Gallup.
I'll take Funchess there.
Me too. DeSean Jackson with Philadelphia.
Oh, that's a close one. I think that's the range that we're talking about Devin Funchess in.
I agree. Yeah, him, John Brown in Buffalo, Anthony Miller. I would put Funchess right in that range. And I know you have Miller a little bit higher than me. I'd put him over Adam Humphreys too.
Oh, yeah, definitely over Adam Humphreys. And that's the thing is, like, you know, Gallup is the number two, clearly, in Dallas. And, you know, we're looking at Funchess as the number two with Andrew Luck. And I have more faith in Andrew Luck's receiver scoring fantasy points than I do Dak Prescott's number two option, which hasn't really happened. It's been either Dez Bryant or Amari Cooper. Gallup flashes here and there, but there's also times where he just disappears.
I'd rather have someone like Funchess, who I think is more reliable week to week, than a Gallup who, you know, 10 weeks out of the year, he's going to disappoint you. And then the other six, yeah, he'll help you win a game, but those 10 weeks will kill you. They add up. So yeah, I've got Funchess right now in my top 45 wide receivers, and it feels good. I'd be fine drafting him there, and I'm going to get plenty shares.
Yep, same here.
All right, here's my biggest winner for redraft leagues. And, you know, running backs aren't as important in Dynasty just because their lifespan is so much shorter, and especially someone who's at the stage in their career that Latavius Murray is. And, Tags, I know that this was probably one of yours as well because you absolutely loved the Murray signing. You immediately came out and said, if you get Latavius Murray outside the top 25, it is an absolute steal. And at first I kind of cringed, like, dude, you're that high on him? And then I got to looking at it and putting him in my rankings. Like, would I rather have him than Mark Ingram in Baltimore? Well, yeah. James White? Yeah. Lamar Miller? I don't even know if he's going to make the team. Jordan Howard is being phased out of Chicago. Even Devontae Freeman? Yeah, I'd rather have Latavius Murray. Damian Williams? Probably I'd rather have Latavius Murray. It's really close, and I know that's going to make a lot of people upset. Jerick McKinnon? I don't know what San Francisco's doing. Latavius Murray's my number 21 running back, Tags.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have him at number 24 right now, but I could see moving him up depending on what we hear out of places like Denver, if they're going to go with more of a timeshare between Philip Lindsay and Royce Freeman, Chris Carson, Rashad Penny, like that situation is up in the air. I'd take Carson now, but I think Latavius Murray is one of the safer picks. I don't think that I don't envision Latavius Murray finishing as a top, you know, six running back. I don't think that's going to happen, but I think he's safe. I think if you're drafting, you know, a team of upside wide receivers and you need some safety at running back, I think Latavius Murray is going to deliver that. He's going to get, you know, 12 to 16 touches per game, and he's going to get a lot of red zone opportunities similar to Mark Ingram. So, yeah, Latavius Murray as a low-end RB2 is about as safe as it gets in that New Orleans offense.
Mark Ingram, RB6 in 2017 tags. Alvin Kamara, RB4. Is Latavius Murray as good as Mark Ingram, maybe better?
I wouldn't say he's better. I think Mark Ingram's a fine running back. I think he creates more yards after the contact than Latavius Murray. As a receiver, they're similar players. I might say Ingram is slightly better in almost everything, but this goes back to slightly better isn't going to translate to a whole lot more fantasy points. I believe
they're going to have similar volume, and that's what it's about.
Yeah, and that's the thing. When it comes down to running backs, you're looking for opportunity and you're looking for, you know, team scoring. And with the Saints, they've been a top six scoring offense for as long as we can all remember.
Yeah. Who's the red zone guy in this offense? It's not going to be Kamara. It's going to be Latavius Murray.
Yeah, they're both going to get touchdowns, and that's the thing is I think they're both going to score. I think Latavius Murray, like the fact that Latavius Murray signed on the second day of free agency with the Saints tells me that like they, everything that they wanted, like he was one of their top guys. Apparently they did make an offer to Mark Ingram. He passed on it and they went to their next option. They were more than okay with that. And so, I mean, if they had waited a long time, I think I'd be a little bit more concerned, be like, I don't know how much they're committing to him. Cause some people are going to bring up Adrian Peterson. Adrian Peterson was signed late in free agency. Like it was just kind of like one of those picks that they added onto the roster. And if it works out, it does. If it doesn't, you know, they had Alvin Kamara. They didn't know how he would work out. Obviously, we found out that was a big plus to their roster. But Latavius Murray has been, you know, a lot less scheme dependent than Adrian Peterson has been. Latavius Murray is almost slotting into that Mark Ingram spot that I would have had Ingram, maybe a few slots lower. I might have had Mark Ingram around RB20, but Latavius Murray at RB24, I just feel like you can't go wrong.
I think the difference between you and I in these rankings, we both think the same thing about Murray's role right now, is just that I think maybe you're not factoring in that Alvin Kamara, there's a chance he gets injured, and if he does, Latavius Murray would be a top 10 running back right away. I'm not saying Kamara has more of a chance than anybody else, but you look at these workhorse running backs or guys who are getting 15 touches a game like Kamara will do, the injury rate's like 30% at some point during the season. And if that was to happen, man, Latavius Murray's stock would skyrocket.
Yeah, and that's one of the things you could take into consideration when, you know, debating between him and someone like Mark Ingram. Whereas Mark Ingram, if there's an injury, you know, to Kenneth Dixon, that's not going to change his value. Latavius Murray has value with Alvin Kamara healthy. So if Kamara were to get hurt, Latavius Murray, you're absolutely right. He would boost up the boards. And let's pretend that Alvin Kamara is not on the team right now. Where would we draft Latavius Murray in that Saints offense? I would have him probably as the number 8 or number 9 running back. So it kind of tells you that there is room for growth and he has safety. So that's why I would choose Latavius Murray over someone like Mark Ingram this year.
Yeah, I guess the reason I put him number 7 is because Alvin Kamara wouldn't be with the Saints and so he wouldn't have as much value. But yeah, I could definitely see 8 or 9. Like I'd put him ahead of Dalvin Cook, Le'Veon Bell, David Johnson, Joe Mixon, James Conner. Tags, why don't we keep moving along? Give us another name for redraft that you think is a winner.
I think Mike Davis has got to be on this list for winners. You know, he only signed a 2-year, $8 million deal with the Bears, but I mean, running backs aren't generating a lot of money. We saw Tevin Coleman, a guy that a lot of people expected to see, you know, big money in free agency, that he was hitting it at 26, limited tread on his tires. So many people thought he was going to get big money, and he ended up signing for, you know, 2 years for $10 million. So if people are worried about Mike Davis getting 2 years, $8 million, I'm not really worried about that. It's just the money that running backs are getting nowadays, you know, if you're not Le'Veon Bell. But Mike Davis is a very competent third down running back. You know, some people look at him as a bruiser and it's like, well, isn't he the same thing as Jordan Howard? No, he was actually a third down option in Seattle's offense a lot more than you would think. Because like when you go back and you look at that team, they were running the ball a ton. Mike Davis was kind of in and out, but he led their team at running back with 42 targets. No other running back, including Chris Carson, saw more than 24 targets. So he's clearly able to contribute on third down, something that the Bears have continually. This is before Matt Nagy's offense became a thing. They had trouble with Jordan Howard and the fact that he's a two down running back. You know, like when he's on the field, you almost know what the Bears are going to do. So adding Mike Davis,
they're not going to take Tariq Cohen off the field on third downs though, right?
Well, they don't. No. They're not going to. They're definitely going to keep Cohen involved, but they don't have to have him in the backfield. They can line up in the slot. They can line up both of them back there. They did that a few times with Howard and Cohen. But Mike Davis, when he's in the field for first and second down, you don't have to think, oh, they're running the ball. Because with Jordan Howard, it was almost a guarantee that they were going to be running the ball down your throat when he's in the backfield. So I think it offers the Bears a little bit more flexibility with their play calling. And Mike Davis, I mean, Jordan Howard wasn't good last year, and he still finished as I think it was a top 20 running back. And that was in PPR formats. I know it wasn't pretty how he got there, but he did score 9 touchdowns. So I think Mike Davis is a clear-cut winner here.
This one really flew under the radar for me. I mean, a lot of people probably didn't even notice that Mike Davis signed with the Bears. And I didn't really think about the fantasy impact. I hadn't even changed him in my rankings that much, but you're right. They're trying to, you know, get Jordan Howard out of town. They're trying to trade him. I think that they want to move this direction. And I'm not sure if he's technically the starter. It's really hard to say someone's a starter in the NFL these days unless they're a workhorse, but really, what's the difference between him and someone like Kenyon Drake?
I mean, Kenyon Drake offers some upside, but they're a team that they could draft a running back. I think after signing Mike Davis, I mean, the Bears don't have a pick in the first 2 rounds. That's first off. So you get to the 3rd round, it's like, can they take a running back? Sure, but it's a very weak running back class, and I think that, I mean, the Dolphins are in rebuild mode, so I don't think that they're going to take a running back. Kenyon Drake probably offers you a little bit more upside as a running back in general, but he's more talented, I think, than Mike Davis, but he's in a lot weaker of an offense. You know, you're playing with a defensive-minded head coach in a brand new coaching job. I don't have much faith in that Dolphins offense. I think we saw with the Bears last year, year one under Matt Nagy, take a massive step forward, which it gives Mike Davis a lot of potential here. And if for whatever reason, let's say I do believe they're going to either trade Jordan Howard or they're going to cut him, one or the other, they might keep him for depth because his salary is just under $2 million. So he's not expensive. But if for whatever reason they say Mike Davis is our starter going forward, Mike Davis, I think, should be considered in the territory of someone like Mark Ingram, you know, right around that RB25 range.
Holy cow, man. His ADP, I'll tell you what, is going to be outside the top 35 running backs. I can guarantee that.
It probably will, because people are talking about...
At least until we hear news about what's going on in Chicago.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, people are going to be a little concerned because Tariq Cohen, but Tariq Cohen is the guy who he is. He's like the Darren Sproles of the 2019, you know, season, where it's like he's that guy who's going to get, you know, 6 to 10 touches per game. He's going to do well with those touches. He'll be a fantasy option, but they need someone to hammer the ball. You have to be able to run the ball, even if you do have an air raid offense with a lot of options. So yeah, Mike Davis, if you get him outside the top 30, and if Jordan Howard is gone, that's stealing, because as I mentioned, even in PPR formats where, you know, Jordan Howard is very mediocre, let's be honest, he's a weak option in PPR. He takes a big hit. He finishes the RB20 last year in this offense. So Mike Davis, a guy who can contribute on third down, hammer the ball on first and second down, similar to the way that Jordan Howard did, you're probably going to get better value out of him.
Yeah, and I think that they're going to run the ball in the red zone more than a lot of other teams do, just because Trubisky, and I'm sorry to say this, Tags, he's fine for fantasy, but he's a little bit of a question mark at this point. He could take a big step forward the way that Jared Goff did, the way that Carson Wentz did, but at this point, we can't really be sure of that. So I would expect Mike Davis to get plenty of work in the red zone. And it's not a bad offense either. They're going to score some points. Defense is going to give them good field position. Offensive line is improved. I think the Bears are going to be fine.
I think the Bears are going to be great, and that, like, the offense is going to be great. I have my concerns about that defense with Vic Fangio leaving, but, you know, the offense, with all the moving parts they had last year, you know, with Mitch Trubisky being a very inexperienced quarterback, are there still some question marks? Sure. Did I see him progress in ways that, you know, I was hoping? Yeah, I did. And, you know, you figure that Allen Robinson didn't have an offseason with the team recovering from an ACL. Anthony Miller was a rookie receiver dealing with a separated shoulder. Taylor Gabriel, it was his first year with the team. Trey Burton, his first year with the team. They added James Daniels to the offensive line. There were so many moving parts in that offense. It's amazing that they were as competent as they were with Jordan Howard back there. So in year 2, adding Cordarrelle Patterson, I just think that there's a lot of different ways that offense can beat you. And is it going to be frustrating from a fantasy standpoint? Absolutely. But the one constant will be the run game. And that's why I think Mike Davis benefits.
They're going from a super boring, like, vanilla offense 2 years ago to they've got all these electric guys, right? Tariq Cohen, Cordarrelle Patterson, Mike Davis. They added Allen Robinson. They added Trey Burton. Mitch Trubisky can run the ball out of the backfield. It's an exciting team you've got, plus the defense.
Yep, and I think the defense takes a step back this year with Vic Fangio gone, as I've mentioned. And I know a lot of people are expecting even more of them because, you know, Roquan Smith is in another year deeper in his career. But losing Adrian Amos hurts a little bit. Callahan hurts a little bit. One of the biggest things from free agency that I think I want to note on the show, it doesn't have a fantasy impact. I mean, not right now it doesn't. But the fact that the Broncos, you know, Vic Fangio went to the Broncos and they signed Bryce Callahan. Okay, he's a slot-only cornerback. That kind of tells me that Chris Harris Jr. is no longer going to be defending the slot in Denver. And I don't know if that's a smart move because I feel like he's been dominant at that position for longer.
Well, he's the best, but maybe he can be really good outside. Wouldn't that be more useful?
He very well can be. But the thing is Fangio also hasn't had a cornerback shadow opposing number one. An opposing offense can kind of pick and choose their battles against them now. So it's just like one of those things that I've paid attention to. And by signing Callahan to a big contract, it kind of says that, Chris Harris, you're moving onto the perimeter.
Yeah, that'll definitely be an interesting thing to watch. All right, Tags, here's my second winner, and then we'll move on to dynasty winners. Carlos Hyde, another older running back. And Carlos Hyde is someone I had ranked outside my top 50 running backs going into the offseason. Tags, I've now got him in my top 30. And I'm not saying I'm expecting him to be the starting running back. As of now, Damian Williams is still the starter. It's his job to lose, apparently. I'm not sure how long it's going to last. And even if it does last, even if Williams goes into the season as the starter, there is no better backup running back than Carlos Hyde. I guess you could say Latavius Murray, right? Because he's technically the number two. But if Damian Williams was to go down, Carlos Hyde would immediately become an absolute monster because it's Andy Reid, because they've got Patrick Mahomes in this dangerous offense. And we'll see what happens with Tyreek Hill, which we actually haven't even talked about yet. We'll do that here in just a moment. But I think Carlos Hyde has a huge upside. Even if he doesn't play all the time, I think he's a pretty decent flex option because they're going to score a lot of points there.
Yeah, and now you have to start wondering about the whole Tyreek Hill incident, the off-the-field thing, where does he get suspended? Does he get cut from the team if the Chiefs, you know, continue to... If you haven't heard, Tyreek Hill is under investigation for an off-the-field issue that involves his son having a broken arm, and we don't know much about it, so I don't want to speculate.
We don't play the speculation game here. We'll let the news play out, and then we'll give you fantasy advice based on that.
Correct. And the thing is the Chiefs have to start, you know, looking forward at this Chiefs offense and the opportunities that people get. You know, Damian Williams has never had more than 13 carries in a regular season game. That's something noteworthy. You know, I don't know when people stopped believing that it was the system and started believing that it was Damian Williams, the player, because, you know, we can go through it. We can talk about Jamal Charles. We can talk about Spencer Ware, Charcandrick West, Damian Williams, Kareem Hunt. Every single running back that has had an opportunity in Andy Reid's offense has succeeded. I don't want to say it doesn't have anything to do with the player because the players are obviously what makes it go. Maybe Andy Reid has an eye for talent. I don't know what it is, but his running backs simply produce. And I don't know if Damian Williams can handle a workload that he got in the playoffs, you know, if he can handle that over, you know, a full season. He is listed at 5'11", 220 pounds, so he's a bigger guy. He doesn't seem that big.
He can catch the ball, too.
But Carlos Hyde, we talked about this on the other podcast, Bobby. It was like a couple weeks ago where I said, if you would have, you know, this last offseason, if we would have had this conversation, who would you rather have as the running back for the Kansas City Chiefs, Damian Williams or Carlos Hyde? Nobody would have said Damian Williams. Like, nobody.
And nothing has changed. It's not like Hyde had a bad season. He just lost his opportunities after he was a workhorse in Cleveland and did fine.
Yep, and a lot of people are going to talk about Nick Chubb and how he did well in Cleveland, whereas Carlos Hyde had that same opportunity.
Well, Nick Chubb's really good.
Yes and no. Nick Chubb is very good. That's why I said Nick Chubb is better than Kareem Hunt, and that's why I wouldn't draft Kareem Hunt. But Carlos Hyde also was playing for that team before Freddie Kitchens was the OC. He was also the running back for that team when Hugh Jackson was the head coach and Todd Haley was the offensive coordinator. Two guys that have proven that they really can't get anything done, you know, with the Cleveland Browns. So I don't want to judge him on that. He went to Jacksonville where the running back position kind of goes to die, seemingly, but Carlos Hyde is more talented than Damian Williams. Is he as much as a three down back? No. I think Damian Williams is a better pass catcher, and that's why he's going to get the first crack of the job. But I do agree with you that Carlos Hyde is the best handcuff in football right now. And if you want to draft him, you know, with a top 30 running back selection, I don't know if I'd go that far, but
right around round 11 or 12 is where I'm eyeing him up.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. And honestly, I would draft both of them. If it came down to it, if I could take Damian Williams in the third and Carlos Hyde in the 11th or 12th, I am all about that because one of these guys is going to be a stud.
Yep, totally agree with that. Let's carry out this principle just a little bit. And Tags, I love the way that you've explained the running backs don't matter type of thing. Like, obviously you can replace Le'Veon Bell with James Conner and still get good running back production. But Saquon Barkley's just an absolute stud. Look what he did in New York. Running backs do matter. But in an Andy Reid offense, you know a guy is going to produce. If Rob Kelly was their starting running back and you knew he was going to get 15 touches per game, Rob Kelly, maybe the worst running back in the NFL right now, would he be a top 15 fantasy running back? I think the answer is yes.
He might. I think he'd be able to run the ball just fine. I worry about his pass catching ability. Like, can he catch passes out of the backfield? That's something that Rob Kelly never really showed.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
That's like putting Jordan Howard in that offense. And that's why, you know, when people tell me that running backs don't matter, it's not really true. Do they matter as much as some people think they do? No, but they do matter. Like, you can't put Jordan Howard in Andy Reid's offense and expect him to be Kareem Hunt. He's not going to be, because he can't catch passes the way that Kareem Hunt can. He can't run routes the way that he does. He doesn't understand when a QB's scrambling where to go on the field. You need a running back who has some intelligence to do so. And that's why the Andy Reid offense, they're going to produce. But do running backs make such a difference that you're going to win or lose games based on their performances? Every now and then, sure. But overall, that's why so many people had an issue with the Giants taking Saquon Barkley at 2, because, you know, he's not a guy that's going to win you 5 extra games because he's on your team. Is he going to do better than maybe any other running back in the NFL? Yeah, probably. Is he going to help you win a game here and there because he broke a long run, or he was able to milk the clock because he was able to continually get first downs? That's going to happen, but you need to have a team built around them, and the running back position is more scheme dependent than it is talent dependent. But then you have guys like Saquon that can say, to hell with my offensive line. They suck, and I know it. My team sucks. My quarterback can't throw the ball. But I'm going to run. I will literally go 10 yards out of my way to gain an extra 5 yards. And he continually did that. That's why Saquon's special. It's very rare to find a running back like that. And he probably is the actual definition of a generational talent. But, you know, guys like, you know, Damian Williams, guys like even Carlos Hyde, they're not generational talents. And Andy Reid will find someone to run his offense no matter, you know, if someone gets hurt, he's going to have next man stand up, kind of like Damian Williams did.
Dags, when I watch Saquon's highlights, I think this is the second best running back I've ever seen behind Barry Sanders. He's that good.
He is phenomenal. I won't put him in that conversation just yet. I think like Walter Payton, Jim Brown, those guys are like phenomenal as well. So, I mean, but, you know, if he goes on with his career performing and continues to get better, and that's one of the things I love about Saquon, any interview you ever see with him, he's like, I just want to continue to get better. It's not like, oh, I want to do what I did last year and dominate the league. No, I want to continue to get better. I feel like I can do better.
He's the whole package, man. He really is.
Yeah, he's such a nice guy. And I just feel bad that he's in the situation he's in New York. I hope they do something. They're not interested in Dwayne Haskins. I don't know. I mean, if you can give up a 3rd-round pick, which is what some people are saying, for Josh Rosen, I mean, how do you not do that as a Giants franchise?
Did you see my boys Brett Rypien and Clayton Thorson through the second fastest velocities at the combine?
I did. Unfortunately, they're not going to get to show it on an NFL field, though.
I don't know. We'll see about that. I think Thorson's going to be a 2nd or 3rd-round pick. Rypien's going to probably be 3rd or 4th round, and I bet they get their chance. You watch their tape, and these are some good dudes.
Honestly, I would be shocked if either of them came off the board before the 4th or 5th round.
All right, we can make a bet on that, especially with Thorson. Rypien is kind of up in the air, but I'm telling you, Thorson's going 2nd or 3rd round.
Nice.
All right, man, we're going to get into some Dynasty favorites here in just a second, but first I want to tell you about my new love, HelloFresh. I'm not kidding, guys. I absolutely love HelloFresh. They send me this box of food that's good for 3 meals, right? Okay. And when you get these boxes from some companies, you think like, man, there might not be enough food in here for the whole family or whatever. I'm telling you, there are leftovers every single time. And the food is so good that I don't want there to be leftovers, but there's just so much food. There's this meal, a Korean bibimbap. I love Korean food. And I've made this probably 4 times since I got it a month ago. That's how good this meal was. I keep the recipe around and I make it all the time. There's a couple like that have really made it into my rotation. So HelloFresh is this meal kit delivery service that shops, plans, and delivers step-by-step recipes and pre-measured ingredients so you can just cook, eat, and enjoy. HelloFresh makes conquering the kitchen a reality with delicious, simple recipes. They have fresh, pre-measured ingredients and easy-to-follow 6-step pictured recipe cards are delivered to your door each week in a special insulated box. You can spend less time planning your meal and grocery shopping so you can get that time back to do more of what you love. There's 3 easy plans to choose from, classic, veggie, and family, with the option to switch between them when your taste changes. And we've got an offer for our listeners. For $80 off your first month of HelloFresh, go to HelloFresh.com/pros80 and enter the promo code PROS80. That's PROS80. It's like receiving 8 meals for free. Again, For $80 off your first month of HelloFresh, that's $20 off each of your first four boxes, go to HelloFresh.com/pros80 and enter promo code PROS80. All right, so let's talk some Dynasty, and I'm going to go first because I'm not letting you take Chris Godwin. He's mine.
That definitely, the free agency definitely helped him, you know, losing DeSean Jackson. The question is, do they replace him? You know, do they draft someone or they just like let Justin Watson go and take over the slot role that is vacated by Adam Humphries? And, you know, do they need to have four wide? Like, I felt like DeSean Jackson just capped the upside of Chris Godwin. So to see him go, I don't know if it changes the offense much. I mean, him and Jameis Winston didn't really connect on the deep ball very well. Like, they just didn't have the chemistry that you need, I guess. I don't know if it just wasn't enough time together. My question is, Chris Godwin, is he good enough where he can overtake Mike Evans?
No, I'm not worried about him overtaking Mike Evans. I mean, I've got Mike Evans as my number nine wide receiver. Chris Godwin, though, you look at what he did last year. What did he start, like two games? He was the 25th ranked fantasy wide receiver last year, and he hardly got any targets.
Yeah, he was only playing like 50% of the snaps quite a bit. And that's why I said him and DeSean Jackson were kind of like sharing one role. They did move around Chris Godwin quite a bit, and that's my biggest question is like who the third wide receiver is, because Chris Godwin can move all over the field. I think that, you know, Mike Evans hasn't played much of a slot role in that offense. I don't know if it's to say that he couldn't, but they haven't really used him in that role. So he's more of a perimeter guy, whereas Godwin is a movable chess piece. And Bruce Arians, that's the reason I'm hesitant to say Mike Evans or Chris Godwin, or they both break out, because you have OJ Howard there. They're going to run the ball a lot better than they did under Dirk Cutter. And it's like, is there going to be room for OJ Howard, Chris Godwin, and Mike Evans to be elite producers? I don't know. And do I think Godwin and Mike Evans, does that gap close? You know, right now I have Godwin as my number 24 dynasty wide receiver. I have Mike Evans at number 8. Does that gap shrink, you know, after the 2019 season?
I think so. I do think it shrinks. Yeah, I've got Godwin right up there as well. He's my number 20 dynasty wide receiver. I'd love to have him, man. I'd love to have him in dynasty. I'd love to have him in redraft. Everyone knows that. You'll probably get sick of hearing it, but I'm begging you guys to draft him this year. Chris Godwin is extremely good. I don't think that the smaller sample size is a fluke. In fact, I think that there's more to come.
It's fun to watch Chris Godwin. He reminded me of Pierre Garçon coming out of school, maybe potentially even better athletically than Pierre Garçon, but like the flexibility that he offers in offense. And that's why I like him so much. And I just hope that Bruce Arians is able to get the most out of him.
All right. Who do you have as your first dynasty winner?
It's Baker Mayfield. I mean, adding Odell Beckham Jr. to your wide receiver core, like, you know, going from Jarvis Landry, Antonio Callaway, and Rashad Perriman to Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, and Antonio Callaway is a lot different.
David Njoku, Kareem Hunt, yeah, on and on.
Yeah, he has so many options there. The concern with me, like for Baker, is that he's not running as much in the NFL as I thought he might. I felt like he could, you know, he could rush for 300 yards a year, you know, run for a couple touchdowns, but he wasn't running at all. And I don't know if that had to do with, you know, the offense and what it limited him to. I don't know. Todd Monken coming over to coach with Freddie Kitchens. Is it Monken's offense? Is it Kitchens' offense? Are the passes limited? I don't think you sign someone like Odell Beckham and say, oh, we're going to dial back the pass attempts. But at the same time, this defense became a lot better. You know, like they've done some things on defense. I felt like there was already a lot of talent on that defense. They should add another cornerback to play opposite Denzel Ward, but they can do that in the second round this year if they wanted to. I just feel like this defense is better than people think. And it's like, if that defense takes a step forward, how many pass attempts can we get out of Baker? So the question is, how high can we move him up? In redraft, it's like, I'm a little hesitant to bring him up more and more, but in dynasty, Baker Mayfield, you can make the argument that he should be a top three dynasty quarterback.
I think you could make that argument. Right now, I've got him number 4, Mahomes, Luck, Rodgers, Mayfield. I think that those four are tighter than most people realize. But yeah, I've got Mayfield number 4 right now. And you talk about his rushing abilities. Patrick Mahomes last year, 272 on the ground. Andrew Luck, 148 on the ground. Aaron Rodgers, 269 on the ground. I'm not especially worried about that. It would be nice if we could get that out of Mayfield, but this is someone I'm looking at who could throw 40 touchdowns in a season, 5,000 yards. I really believe Mayfield has that type of production in him. Is it going to happen every year? No, that doesn't happen with Andrew Luck and Aaron Rodgers every year. We'll see about Mahomes, but he does have that upside. He's going to win some MVPs. He's going to win some Super Bowls. Get excited in Cleveland, and if you got him in Dynasty, or if you can't acquire him in Dynasty, you should be pretty pumped.
Absolutely.
All right, Tags, my next one may seem a little obvious, but I also don't want to give bad advice and pass up the guys who, you know, are big boomers in dynasty leagues. James Washington. I get it, they got Dante Moncrief, and I get it, James Washington had a small sample size last year. He didn't catch a bunch of targets thrown his way, but in terms of production per snap, he was among the top in the league. I don't think that's going to continue exactly, but I do think he takes a big jump forward. I've got him now ahead of Kiki QT in redraft leagues, and in dynasty it's the same way because Washington is a lot more upside.
Yeah, I think that this is a good one. I actually had Washington on my list of players as well as my second one, and the reason I did is because the signing of Dante Moncrief was kind of like, okay, there's nothing really better out here, and we kind of have to take a wide receiver because we're not guaranteed anything in the draft. They do have some needs on the defensive side of the ball. They need another edge. I know they just signed Mark Barron in free agency, but linebacker is still questionable for them. So I feel like there are still needs for that Steelers team on defense, and if they don't select a wide receiver in the first round, which it seems unlikely, let's be real about that, I think James Washington is walking into the season as, you know, the number one option on the perimeter. I think he's better than Dante Moncrief. He's had a year to work with Ben Roethlisberger, whereas Moncrief is now on the third quarterback in 3 years. He hasn't really succeeded at the NFL level the way that some people thought he would. But James Washington, yeah, you know, losing Antonio Brown in his 170-some targets and adding Dante Moncrief, I would say this is definitely a big win for James Washington.
So how high are you willing to draft him right now? If you're doing a dynasty startup, would you take him near Mike Williams, Dante Pettis?
Washington, no, I wouldn't. Because I still think it's possible that the Steelers draft a wide receiver in one of the top three rounds. And the sample size we have on Washington wasn't great. I don't know if it was just a rookie thing, but James Washington, he's been known. Like, they've said good things about him in the papers. Like, they say that he's a hard worker, that he's getting out there. It's just more of getting on the same page with Ben Roethlisberger. And, you know, having that on the perimeter, it's more about opportunity with him. And do I think he gets the opportunity? As it sits right now, and if the Steelers didn't draft a wide receiver, I'd move Washington up probably around someone like a Marvin Jones, Robbie Anderson area in Dynasty.
Okay, what about Courtland Sutton? Would you rather have him or James Washington?
Oh, I have Sutton higher right now, just because I know that he's a number one role. I know that Denver drafted him to be their number one wide receiver. They're another team that could draft a receiver.
But Joe Flacco, man.
I don't think that's going to be there for long. I mean, okay. Flacco, I know that John Elway is talking like Flacco's in his prime and all that, but that's garbage. He's just saying that. But Courtland Sutton was drafted to be the number one, whereas James Washington, he was arguably drafted to be the number three, and I don't know if the Steelers view him as anything more than that.
I think that's a good way to put it, and I think Sutton is more talented. I just think the offense lends itself better to passing than in Denver. So I've got Washington barely ahead of Courtland Sutton. I also have him ahead of Will Fuller.
Will Fuller. Now, see, Will Fuller is different for me. Will Fuller has shown chemistry with Deshaun Watson and, you know, with DeAndre Hopkins stealing. DeAndre Hopkins has been on the field when Will Fuller has produced. So it's like, you know, DeAndre Hopkins demands a lot of attention.
They've never had Fuller, Hopkins, and Kiki QT healthy at the same time.
QT is definitely someone who's going to steal. I think he actually might steal more from Hopkins because Hopkins has been like a high target guy, whereas Fuller has been a guy that's, you know, he's produced on like, you know, 5 to 8 targets per game.
Fuller's coming back from the ACL too. That's another issue I have with him.
ACL doesn't really concern me anymore. And I know that it probably should to a small extent, but we've seen so many players come back from ACLs now. Like, Achilles are different. I think Achilles are like career killers. Like, that's like the old ACL, where it's like ACL injuries used to end careers. But we've seen so many players come back and, you know, be dominant even after the ACL. So that's why Emmanuel Sanders, like, if you guys are listening now and, you know, how do I feel about Emmanuel Sanders next year? I wouldn't draft him. I will not draft him.
Yep, even in the last round.
I mean, maybe the last round, but coming off an Achilles tear, you know, he's 31, I think, going to be 32.
Requires, you know, his game relies on his agility.
Yep, and that's, yeah, that's exactly. So if you own Emmanuel Sanders in a dynasty league, like, trade him away. I have him down at number 77 in my wide receiver rankings.
All right, Tags, who do you have for your next dynasty winner?
So this one was tough. You definitely had James Washington there, but another one is Dante Pettis. The fact that the 49ers were not even in the conversation for Antonio Brown blows my mind. It seemed to make all the sense in the world. I mean, they might say we're not dealing with character issues, and that's fine. If that's the way they're rolling, I get it. And, you know, I'll respect them for that. But to know that, you know, they weren't in any conversations for wide receivers in free agency. They weren't in the conversation for Antonio Brown. You know, maybe Odell Beckham was available and they didn't offer enough. Whatever the case was, they had cap room. They had everything. But Dante Pettis is a guy they drafted in the second round last year. There's no competition. You know, Marquise Goodwin is a deep threat. He is what we thought he was. And, you know, George Kittle, he's going to be that dominating force over the middle of the field. and that's going to pull some safeties. But Dante Pettis, in a small span, you know, with their third string quarterback, Nick Mullins, he flashed a few times. And against Seattle at that, a defense that wasn't allowing too much to wide receivers throughout the year. So Dante Pettis is someone that deserves a giant bump up dynasty boards after the offseason that the 49ers have had.
He's the perfect fit for that offense. And let's not forget, Jimmy Garoppolo was on pace for 5,000 yards if you expand it out to a full season. And that was without knowing the playbook. That was with having no wide receivers, really. Jimmy G is going to put up the passing numbers. He's not a great asset for fantasy because he doesn't run whatsoever. And he's probably not going to get as many touchdowns. But Dante Pettis is going to be his guy. He's perfect for Shanahan. You know I love Dante Pettis as well. All right, let's go team winners. And I'll let you start this one first.
It's the Browns. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know how you don't. I mean, when you add Kareem Hunt, Odell Beckham, you know, they re-signed Greg Robinson at left tackle. That's still a need for them. They need a left tackle. But Sheldon Richardson.
Their defensive line is amazing.
Olivier Vernon. Yeah, like when you look at it, Ogunjobi, Richardson, Miles Garrett, Vernon, it's like, what are you going to do?
That's a Pro Bowl defensive line almost.
It is. It basically is. All of those guys can be considered Pro Bowlers. And, you know, losing Jabril Peppers in the back end, can they find a safety in the draft? Can they add a few linebackers? They cut Jamie Collins. Can they stop the run? The linebackers need to get better. So that's the biggest question mark about that roster. But, you know, looking at that team, they don't have very many holes after free agency and the trades that they've made. And, you know, only losing, you know, a first and a third round pick for Odell Beckham, the Browns win the offseason.
Yeah, I think that they do as well. I was going to pick them, but I kind of figured that's who you were going to go with. Now, I've mentioned this one before. My pick is the Green Bay Packers. I mean, they really did a good job. They got Billy Turner on their offensive line, but their defense is really where they improved. Za'Darius Smith, outside linebacker. Adrian Amos at safety, stealing him from the Bears was awesome. And then Preston Smith, another outside linebacker. They filled their holes, and this defense is going to be in the top half of the league this year with Aaron Rodgers on offense. Ooh, Green Bay Packers are dangerous.
The Green Bay Packers are a good bet for the Super Bowl right now with the odds that are out there. I like the Browns before the Odell Beckham trade is like a deep sleeper to make it to the Super Bowl. Like if you wanted to put out some crazy odds, like.
But now everyone's saying it, right?
Yeah, yeah. Now it's the cool thing. And now there's no way that I would want to make that bet because it's still a long shot. But the Packers, like looking at that, I just released my mock draft 4.0 and, you know, looking over the Packers roster, because when I get to the team that I get to in the mock draft, it's like I look at this team and there are not big holes. Like tight end is a problem, but Jimmy Graham's there for another year. They could draft one, develop him. They do need to add a free safety because Tremon Williams is older and they need someone to pair with Amos. Wide receiver, you know, that's something I would suggest because I feel like they've continually searched for wide receivers in the later rounds.
Who are they going to get in this draft who's going to compete right away?
In my newest mock draft, I hadn't put him there yet, but I did after this because what they've done on defense, you know, settling that edge rusher position, I gave them A.J. Brown with the number 12 overall pick. And A.J. Brown is someone that can come in and contribute right away. He's a player that you can almost say that's kind of like a Juju Smith-Schuster in a way where it's like he can play perimeter. He could play in the slot. He's a big body. He's 6'2", 6'1", or 6'2", 230 pounds.
Great separation when he's that big too.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying is like, you know, having him as the number two option, like, you know, Davante Adams is still there. That's going to help. And he's going to see a lot of second tier cornerbacks, and to know that he could play the slot is massive. And, you know, with the Packers moving more towards an offensive oriented team, you know, talking about the hiring of their head coach, it's time to get excited for Packers fans. I feel like this team has far less holes than people think. I think they can contend for a Super Bowl in 2019. So it's like get players that can contribute right now. And that's why I think they went after Amos. That's why I think they went after Za'Darius Smith, Preston Smith. I feel like this team can go places. They just need to invest in some players to let Aaron Rodgers shine.
Yeah, and we were talking about how good the Bears are. I think the Bears have a legitimate chance at making the Super Bowl or winning the Super Bowl. It depends on Trubisky, right? He's got to take that step forward as a top 15 quarterback in the NFL, at least. I mean, I guess not, because Bortles almost, you know, made it to the Super Bowl with the Jags. They were just one blown call away. And the Bears, I don't think they have that level of defense, but it's very good. The Bears could make it, but they're probably not even the favorite in their own division because the Packers are that good.
Yep. I would tend to agree with you on that. I would say that the Packers should be the favorite. I think the Bears will contend. The Vikings are still a very good football team. It's one of the best divisions in football.
Yeah. I mean, you could easily see the Bears missing out on the playoffs.
Well, I mean, we saw it last year with the Vikings. We saw it with the Packers. You know, both those teams missed the playoffs. And that's something that I don't think anybody predicted before the beginning of the season.
All right, let's go losers here. And Jarvis Landry is a clear one. Maybe you were going to talk about him, so sorry. But the one I want to talk about here is Quincy Enunwa. And Quincy Enunwa is someone that I absolutely loved. I was going to get him. You know, we were doing these mock drafts. I would grab him at the end of the draft every single time because he's this great slot receiver, creates a lot of separation. I thought he was going to be the number one in New York. Sam Darnold seems to have liked him, but he has to play in the slot, and he's not going to now because Jameson Crowder is there, and Jameson Crowder is a slot-only receiver. We saw the Jets try to push Enunwa outside at the end of last season, and it didn't work well. That's not what he does, but apparently they're going to try it again.
Enunwa is just going to be a guy now. He's going to see, you know, 3 to 5 targets per game, and that's that. He's not someone that, I mean, if something happens to Jameson Crowder and he gets hurt, they can move him there, and then he'd have some value.
They probably want it, though. They would just use someone else.
but Quincy Enunwa, he dropped down far in my dynasty rankings. He's outside my top 80 wide receivers right now.
Yeah, he's Nelson Aguilar, David Moore. You know what I mean? He's one of these guys that, yeah, if you have to pick them up as a streamer 1 week, go for it. But there's no way you're going to draft him. Dynasty leagues, it's different because you roster like 28 guys. But in redraft leagues, yeah, there's really no need for Enunwa.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, who are you going with, Tags?
Yeah, I didn't put Jarvis Landry on mine, but that's a good one. He obviously lost a lot. The targets are not going to be anywhere near what they were in Miami or even during his first year with Cleveland. So that's a good one. You know, Jordan Howard is someone that I mentioned before. And, you know, when talking about Mike Davis, I think Jordan Howard is a get rid of at all costs in Dynasty. I don't think that he's built for today's NFL, and I don't think that he's a bad running back. I think he is a good running back. He's a good pass blocker too, but he offers nothing in the passing game, and you know, those running backs are very limited in today's NFL. The Patriots would be a perfect team for him. However, the Patriots, they have Sony Michel. You know, they're pretty good at that position. So, you know, trying to find teams where he could make a difference, it's really tough right now. So Jordan Howard is a massive loser to me in this one.
Yeah, no doubt about it. He went from being one of these guys that could have been a top 20 running back to, yeah, he's probably worth drafting at the end of your draft. You know what I mean? That's a big drop.
Yeah, if he stays in the Bears roster, I'd say he's probably one of the better handcuffs just because of the role that he would walk into if something happened to Mike Davis. But yeah, Jordan Howard, unfortunately, he took a big dip here.
My next guy who took a plummet this offseason, and I totally get it, providing for his family, making a lot of money, accepting the best offer. But man, it stinks because I was super pumped about maybe John Brown will go to the Colts. Maybe he'll go to the Packers. And if he does, he's going to be awesome. And now he's with Josh Allen. And I don't want to draft him. And Tags, I know you don't want to bring him up because John Brown was your boy, but this is disappointing, isn't it?
I love John Brown. I mean, like, we talked to him on the show, actually, you know, and he seems like a really good guy. But, you know, I'm not going to fault him for his decision because he followed, you know, the things to take care of his family. And that's what he has to do. And, you know, it was the most guaranteed money with his health situation, the way that it's been. He has to worry about that stuff, like, because if he has any more problems with the sickle cell trait, then there's probably not going to be any other team that's going to want to sign him in the future. So good on him. Unfortunately, yeah, this is a really bad situation. You know, he goes from Lamar Jackson, one of the more inaccurate quarterbacks in the league, to Josh Allen, who just might be even more inaccurate. He does have a big arm. Are they going to connect down the field quite a few times? Yeah, probably. It's going to be similar to like Robert Foster at times, but it's a run first team. I mean, if you look at what he did with Lamar Jackson last year, it was terrible. Like, it was legitimately terrible. And I wrote an article on John Brown and the fantasy fallout from him signing with the Bills. But yeah, he's
I was ranking him like wide receiver 70 those weeks, and I was right.
Yeah, he was droppable. You know, now it's like, Do you even want to draft him in redraft leagues? I mean, I guess you could say I would in the late rounds, just the chance that him and Josh Allen suddenly develop something.
I'd rather have Devontae Parker, though.
I would rather have Devontae Parker right now as well.
People are going to come after you on Twitter, even though I'm the one that brought it up first, because I don't know if you saw, but there were a bunch of people saying that you drafting Devontae Parker in that league was the most defensive thing they've ever seen.
Well, Devontae Parker, we had our show and I said the Never Again award went to Devontae Parker. But, you know, with Ryan Fitzpatrick coming there, with the new regime saying we're going to give you a 2-year extension, which basically tells me they have plans for him. Ryan Fitzpatrick has produced fantasy wide receivers. Like, I don't know if people realize this. And Devontae Parker is someone that we've been waiting to break out. And I mean, if you can sell high on him, that's do it.
Okay, Tex, be honest. What is the difference between Devontae Parker and Kevin White? Can we just clarify this a little bit? One of them, has little boom booms on his toenail and stuff, and he's out for the season. One of them broke his leg twice and broke his collarbone. We never really got to see him. I think Kevin White is less of a bust than Parker's been. So why are you so willing to hang on to Parker and not Kevin White?
Because... So Devontae Parker actually did flash in the NFL. He proved that he could play in the NFL. He didn't get all the opportunity that he could have at the start of his career, but with Ryan Tannehill. But the quarterbacks, if you look at that he's worked with, haven't been good quarterbacks that have produced fantasy wide receivers. And then you have to worry, then you have to think about the whole Adam Gase effect, wondering why didn't Adam Gase use this guy more in the offense. We saw it in the Houston game. I think it was a Monday night or a Thursday night game where the Dolphins suddenly needed a wide receiver and Devontae Parker's in the starting lineup. He goes over 100 yards and people are watching that game on national TV saying, why haven't they been using Devontae Parker more, like, you know, over the years? And it's a question that I've asked myself, like, internally. I've been watching the Dolphins games and wondering why guys like Danny Amendola are stealing targets from Devontae Parker. But, you know, there's a lot of things that go into it. I think coaching matters so much. And to know that Adam Gase, again, he's a guy that holds a lot of grudges, and we've seen that with Kenyon Drake. I'm not saying that I'm going to buy as many Devontae Parker shares as I possibly can, but I'm saying that if you're looking for someone that you could probably get for dirt cheap, someone that you could maybe get at a massive discount because people are so tired of him, if you can get him for next to nothing, do it, because there still is potential there. But don't give away the farm for him.
Tags, I posted this last October, and so the numbers have changed just a little bit, but I wanted to share this stat again because everyone thinks Devontae Parker has been a monumental bust, right? And I was just, you know, pulling your leg there. I I'm with you on Devontae Parker. You watch him on tape, he looks like a good wide receiver. He was their number one in the preseason last year because they had Xavier Howard covering him in the preseason. They had big plans for Parker. It didn't work out last year. It might this year. But listen to this. Devontae Parker has 25 career starts, and he has 60-plus yards in 16 of them. That's a 64% rate. The only better players in that time in terms of, you know, higher rate of 60-plus yards, Antonio Brown, Michael Thomas, Mike Evans, Julio Jones, Odell Beckham, Keenan Allen, Brandon Cooks. Those are all wide receiver ones.
Don't get me excited about Devontae Parker again. Don't do it. I'm not talking myself into him. I said never again. You know, I'm being dragged back into it.
I'll draft him just as long as when you guys are mad at us for telling you to draft Devontae Parker, you tweet Tags and not me. At Mike Tagley or NFL. Okay, so who's your last one, Tags?
Ben Roethlisberger. And I would have put him under the Dynasty one too, but he doesn't have much value in Dynasty anyways because he's an aging quarterback. So I just put him in the redraft loser because Ben Roethlisberger, you don't offer anything at all rushing. You and James Washington didn't get on the same page. Juju Smith-Schuster is now going to see top-tier cornerbacks if you're going to move him to the perimeter. If you're going to keep him in the slot, it seems like they might now that they signed Dante Moncrief. So that would be a good thing. But losing Antonio Brown, losing Le'Veon Bell, let's not pretend that this is going to help his fantasy stock.
You're right. Andy was horrible last year to begin with. His fantasy stats were there, but man, you watched him on tape. And he was bad. He wasn't quite Eli Manning, but he's getting there.
There was one game where I watched him. I think it was versus the Panthers where I watched him. I was like, wow, like Ben Roethlisberger looked fantastic in that game. But outside of that, you're right. He was just not very good in 2018. And I know that some people will be like, oh, he finishes a top, I think, five fantasy quarterback. Yeah, that's very deceiving because he threw the ball a lot.
Yeah, maybe he will again, but...
He might, but he doesn't have Antonio Brown again, so I doubt it. I think that they're going to want to run the ball a little bit more. I think they're going to have to share the load with James Conner a little bit because as the year went on, he wore down a little bit in his first year as a starter. But yeah, Ben Roethlisberger, I wouldn't draft him as a top 15 quarterback this year. So to go from like the QB 8, QB 9 in my rankings all the way down to outside the top 15, yeah, I would say that's a big dip.
And it's a pretty close-knit group. From 9 to 15 is all pretty close.
It is, and that's why I put him outside the 15, because I would take guys like Lamar Jackson over him. I'd take Trubisky over him. I'd take Jimmy Garoppolo over Ben Roethlisberger this year.
What about Josh Allen? And I'm not kidding.
No, that's the conversation I think you'd have. I mean, Josh Allen, is he going to be undervalued as a fantasy option? I don't know the answer to that. And like, you know, every now and then I come across a player and I just have to admit that, is that I really don't know how to feel because he had dirty fantasy points, you know, and he continually did it. So it's like, I have to take notice to that. Is it like a Tim Tebow thing where it's like, yeah, just do it. I mean, Lamar Jackson's were different. There was design runs where Josh Allen scrambled a lot. Now that there's a year of film on him, do teams adjust a lot more? Do they keep a QB spy more? Do they bracket him? I don't know how the teams are going to adjust, but they typically do. And that's why those quarterbacks don't stick around if they can't complete passes. So I think Josh Allen takes a step back, but I still think there's going to be some ups to his game that are going to make people wonder. Like, I think he's a streamer.
I've got him right there in that Prescott Stafford range around QB 20.
Yeah, that's fair. I think I'd take Dak probably over Roethlisberger and Josh Allen, but that's the tier. I think you're right there.
Yeah, I wouldn't take Tom Brady over Big Ben. I just don't think he's going to pass the ball enough. I would take Trubisky I would obviously take Baker Mayfield. Jameis Winston's my number 5 quarterback. So, yeah, I agree. I've got Roethlisberger as my number 13 quarterback. Not quite as low as you, but I think it's really close with, you know, Wentz, Goff, Roethlisberger. That's the tier I've got him in, Jimmy G.
Yep, that's fair.
All right, now let's move on to some dynasty losers, and I'll let you go first here.
Sterling Shepard, big loser. And I know that some people are going to be like, what? They got rid of Odell Beckham? Like,
yeah, that surprises me a little bit.
They signed Golden Tate to a 4-year
deal. Oh, shoot, man. I totally forgot about that.
I mean, it'd be better for Giants fans to forget about it. But Sterling Shepard has not scored a touchdown while playing on the perimeter in his entire career. That's not good. Okay? And the reason I say that is because Golden Tate, you know, as he ages, a lot of wide receivers tend to move into slot only roles. And Golden Tate, over the last couple of years, has played over 70% of the snaps in the slot. Sterling Shepard has played a lot of his snaps in the slot. You know, like over his career, I think he's like close to the 80% mark. So he's been like a slot heavy receiver, but he has seen 80 targets on the perimeter throughout his career. He is much worse with those targets. He has never scored a touchdown on them. And the Golden Tate signing makes zero sense unless they're going to trade Sterling Shepard. But to me, I want to get rid of the uncertainty of this franchise that is literally tanking themselves into the ground, that has tied themselves to Eli Manning and whatever else comes this way. I'm curious to see what the draft brings, but Sterling Shepard, he went from someone that won, you know, free agency after Odell Beckham was traded to someone who legit nosedived when they signed Golden Tate, because I don't think you signed Golden Tate to play on the perimeter.
Here's my next one. This is going to surprise some people too, because everyone's excited about him in Dynasty, but you know, I had David Njoku as my number 5 or 6 Dynasty tight end. Not anymore. I've got him down at number 8 behind Ebron, Ingram, Hunter Henry, because Odell Beckham is there and he's not going away.
Yep. It hurts. It really does. I think Njoku, I think his ceiling is still there. I think he still can be the top red zone presence on that team. You know, him and Odell Beckham can be the top two guys that they go to in the red zone, because Jarvis has never been that guy. Callaway, if he hands. I still think Njoku can be a, you know, a consistent top 8 type producer, but I think he did definitely lose some ceiling there.
All right, Tags, who are you going with for your last one?
As a dynasty guy, I'm going to go with Geronimo Allison. And I know that, you know, a lot of people are like, well, he wasn't really on my list. He was on mine because he still had a chance to win that number 2 receiver job. He did play really well with Aaron Rodgers. But to know that the Packers didn't put a round tender on him, basically some team can sign him and they get nothing for it, tells me everything that I need to know about how they feel about him. So, you know, Equanimeous St. Brown, guys like that are going to be over him in Dynasty, which means Geronimo Allison is sadly probably droppable.
That's a good one, man. That's a really good one. All right, here's my next one. And it's not especially Dynasty, but it also does matter for Dynasty because he's going to be around for a little bit longer and he's being drafted pretty high. Le'Veon Bell, he's going to the Jets, man. They're not going to do anything. And you've talked about this before. You've got to be in a good offense if you want to be one of the top 3 or 4 running backs. And I know some people are still going to draft him that way, but there's a big difference between Pittsburgh's offense and the Jets' offense.
There is a big difference, and it all starts with the offensive line. Continually, over his entire career, people have praised Le'Veon Bell for his patience and that he's the most patient runner. You need an offensive line to be that runner. I think that Joe Mixon can be that type of runner too, but it's just like, if you were to put Joe Mixon behind that Steelers offensive line for the past few years, he probably would have had similar results. Maybe he's not as good of a receiver as Le'Veon Bell, but he's not going to be able to have patience behind that Jets offensive line. I know that they've tried to start rebuilding it and trading for Osemele from the Raiders. Jonathan Harrison, is he going to be the starting center for them? I don't know. But I still think that this offensive line can use upgrades across it. So I'm not excited about them. Sam Darnold, Adam Gase. Can we go back to Adam Gase and talk about like the problem with him? And like, did we not watch the Dolphins offense like the last couple of years? And do you want a running back tied to that? I think the Dolphins running backs scored a total of 7 touchdowns the last 2 years in Miami. And he had Damian Williams. He had Kenyon Drake. He had Jay Ajayi. He had running backs. And they didn't do anything, okay? So Damian Williams, the guy that everybody talks about as a top 15 running back this year, Adam Gase had that guy. A 3-down running back, and he didn't use him like that. They're going to use Le'Veon Bell, but I don't think Sam Darnold is the next coming of Tom Brady. I think that he's going to be a franchise quarterback. I think he's going to be fine, but I think he is going to take some time to develop into that guy. I think that the Jets are a team that wants to be defense first, and they want to be able to run the ball. The problem is they don't have the offensive line to do it.
All right, Tags, let's finish this off by going with one team that was a big loser in free agency.
I think that this is clearly the Giants. I mean, losing Vernon.
You know, I'm going to argue with you on this one here, because what were they going to win anyway, right? The next 3 years, did they have any chance at the playoffs, let alone the Super Bowl?
Yes. If they had a quarterback and if they added a few pieces on defense, they could have. And
you really think so?
This is where Dave Gettleman, like, he's only been the GM for just over a year now. And, like, honestly, I think there should be talks of firing him after this year. And I know that's hard to do with a GM because you have to, like, let him, you know, live out his vision and what. But what is his vision? Like, you're trading away good players. You're acquiring maybe not so good ones. Like, the acquisition of Kevin Zeitler, I don't think that was bad. I mean, like, trading away Vernon, that definitely hurts. Like, improving the offensive line, Zeitler, putting him, you know, alongside Will Hernandez, you know, as the guards now. They have that solidified. Nate Solder, you know, they need a right tackle still. But it's like letting Landon Collins walk. Now you don't have a starting safety. I understand you trade for Jabril Peppers. You sign Antoine Bethea, who's towards the end of his career. You have a young running back in Saquon Barkley. Like, all these signs, like, drafting Saquon Barkley at number two, signing Bethea, all these things signify a franchise that's going for a win. But the problem is you're missing a quarterback, and then you go and you trade your top wide receiver that, and wide receivers last a long time. You know, like, they're not, it's not like a running back where it's like, oh, they're going to have like 2 years, 3 years, 4 years in their prime, maybe, and then you're going to move on from them. Odell Beckham should have been on this team. He should have been like a guy that you build your franchise around if you're rebuilding. So I think the Giants still think that they're going to win somehow, but the moves that they've made in free agency, dude, in Golden Tate, it's a bad signing. I will say that he probably was the best wide receiver available in free agency, but he does not fit your team because now you're going to move around pieces and you're going to move players like Sterling Shepard somewhere he doesn't belong, and it's actually going to negatively impact your franchise.
With the Giants still starting Eli Manning and holes still all over their offense, all over their defense, who is more likely to have the number one pick next year and get Tua? If you've got Odell Beckham on your team, you're not going to have the number one pick, probably. I think now they've got a pretty good chance.
They might, and that's the thing.
That's why I don't mind this quite as much as everyone else. It's still stupid, but...
It is stupid, okay, but we had this conversation on Twitter about the whole Khalil Mack thing. You know, analytics saying that the Khalil Mack trade, that the Raiders, it was the best move of the year. I think that's dumb.
Help the Raiders.
I think it's dumb, though.
Yeah, but it didn't help them as much as the Bears.
Right, and the reason that this move on Odell Beckham, the reason that this does not help their franchise, you traded him for a first and a third round pick. The third round pick, throw it out the freaking window. Like, a third round pick, what does it actually mean to your franchise? Like, how? What's the hit rate on third round picks?
Well, and plus you're paying $20 million a year for Beckham that you're not even going to have.
We're not even talking about the salary. I'm just talking about the players. I'm talking about the actual players. Like, the third round pick, what is the likeliness that you find a long-term starter in the third round? It's not likely. And then you talk about the first round pick that you got. It's number 17. So you're not guaranteed a stud.
50% for a starter, not just a star. Star, you've got like a 5% chance, right? A starter, you've got 50-50 chance with the 17th pick.
That's my issue. If they would have traded, if they were like, you know what, if they were to admit, we're a rebuilding franchise, we understand it's going to take some time, we're trading away Odell Beckham, we're investing in our future. If they had traded him for two first round picks and Jabril Peppers, okay, that's something I could maybe get on board with. Just, I still feel like that they shouldn't have done it.
I mean, still not enough, but...
But what I'm saying is a first and a third round pick, that's all you got? Like, literally for one of the best wide receivers to ever play the game.
While you're paying all that money to, it's just ridiculous. Mine is not anywhere near as obvious as the Giants, but my team that I think was a big loser in free agency is the Jags. My Jags. Oh, man, I love Nick Foles. I love watching him. I love rooting for him. But this is a horrible decision. They're not suddenly Super Bowl contenders because they got Nick Foles, who we talked about last show, two shows ago, whatever it was, who's basically, I know you're not going to like to hear this, the same player as Blake Bortles over the last 4 years. Same interception rates, fewer yards per attempt, lower quarterback rate, lower winning percentage if you want to play that game. I don't care about that as much because it's more about the team. But he's basically been Blake Bortles without running ability.
Before they even signed him, I said that it would be a mistake by their franchise. But, you know, with the way that this team's going, apparently this has like Bears with Mike Glenn written all over it, where it's like the Bears were bidding against themselves and they paid him way too much money. Apparently nobody else was bidding on Nick Foles.
This is worse than when they drafted a running back in the top five overall.
And yeah, and that's the thing is the Jags, they're not going to draft a quarterback now because of that. Like,
exactly, and they need one.
You're going to wait at least 2 years. Like, if Nick Foles, let's pretend that Nick Foles is bad this year. Does that mean that they're automatically going to draft a quarterback in 2020? No, it doesn't, because they signed him to a four-year deal with a lot of guaranteed money. So I think they're tied for, they have to at least give him 2 years, I think, to show that. And then you're going to miss the next 2 years of quarterbacks, which is a problem because they're very, very good classes.
Yeah, I hope I'm wrong. but the Jags are not making the playoffs this year with Nick Foles. I'm sorry.
I actually am with you in this. Like, after releasing Malik Jackson, Tayshaun Gibson gone, I feel like the defense is starting to, they're losing some of their players. They still have a very talented defense, and, you know,
if they lose three games in a row, Jalen Ramsey's going to lose his head again.
Yeah, and that's another player that you could talk about, you know, like potentially trading. Like, if you're a rebuilding franchise and you're trying to make a statement with Nick Foles, like they said, then Jalen Ramsey, if they do lose a few games and he talks in the media, you might be looking at a trade with him. And I'm sure there'd be 31 NFL teams. Well, maybe 30. I can't add the Giants in there, but 30 NFL teams that would actually be in line for services of Jalen Ramsey.
You can't add the Giants because they're rebuilding or because they're not an NFL team?
Because I don't know what they're doing.
All right, man, that's all for today's show. That was a lot of fun, and looking forward to talking to you when we do our next episode, which is a mock draft of the NFL draft. We're not doing a mock draft for fantasy. We are going to pretend that we are the GMs of these teams and pick the players we think belong with these teams. There's even going to be trades, so make sure you don't miss that one. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yes, I always look forward to those episodes. Can't wait.
That's my favorite, man. That's my favorite across all the sports. I just did the March Madness episode, which is one of my favorites. The mock NFL draft episode, number one favorite.
It's so much fun because, and the reason is because, like, we do mock draft episodes on fantasy football, and those are fun. Like, don't get me wrong, they are fun. But the NFL draft, there's so much varying opinions on what a team should do and, you know, their roster that they currently have, that I enjoy it so much because there's such a wide variety of things that can happen, things that are going to go wrong, things that people are going to be like, what the hell are you talking about? But that stuff happens during the NFL draft where teams legitimately make those picks where you're like left scratching your head like, why'd they just do that? I can't wait to do that show. It's going to be so much fun.
Yep, absolutely. All right, that's all for today's show. Like I mentioned, we have that show coming up where we're going to be doing a mock of the NFL draft. Make sure to hit that subscribe button so you don't miss out on any future shows. And thanks to the sponsors of today's show, PristineAuction.com, PristineAuction.com, and HelloFresh, where you can get $80 off your first month by going to HelloFresh.com/pros80 and enter the promo code PROS80. That's PROS80. For Mike Tagliere, I'm Bobby Sylvester. Thanks for listening and enjoy your football. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve slowly in a pool full of your love. But I don't even know how the chemistry works when your pool's out kicking in the dirt, kicking in the sand and stirring up trouble.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Discover a new educational and interactive podcast, Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids. Our episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We went shape hunting around the block, and we found spheres and cubes on the street.
That was great fun. Join Stories for Kids, the Lingo Kids podcast, inspiring you to learn while having fun. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.